Han visste det ikke ennå, men noen av de beste barndomsminnene han skulle ta med seg videre i livet, var dagene hjemme syk fra skolen med bestefar som barnevakt. Ikke det at det var så innmari gøy å være syk, men han fikk bestille McNuggets til lunsj og se på TV i sofaen mens bestefar leste papiravisa ved siden av. Og det er nettopp sånne dager som betyr mer enn det virker som der og da. For sånn er livet, og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Velkommen til podcasten Frilanslivet, en podcast av min kollega Hanna von Bergen og meg, Kristina Skreiberg. Vårt mål med denne podcasten er å være en faglig og inspirerende kanal for alle dere som jobber for dere selv i medie-, kunst- og kulturbransjen.
Ukens annonsør er regnskapsprogrammet Fiken. Akkurat som oss brenner Fiken for at flere frilansere og små bedrifter skal lykkes. Og bak Fiken så står mennesker som selv har erfart hvor vanskelig regnskap kan være. Og de har derfor laget en løsning som gjør det lett å føre regnskapet selv. Så lett at både Kristina og jeg har brukt det i flere år, og helhjertet anbefaler det til andre frilansere. Vil du prøve Fiken gratis i 30 dager? Gå inn på fiken.no.
Vi har internationale gjester i dag, så jeg går over til engelsk. Today's guests are the Finnish-Norwegian artist duo Rita Ikonen and Caroline Hjort. We will speak English throughout this conversation, so Rita, one of our two guests, can join in. Caroline and Rita first met 10 years ago, and since then they have worked together on their ongoing collaborative project called Eyes As Big As Plates. Together, they photograph elderly people, and before they photograph them, they camouflage them in elements from the surrounding nature. This ongoing collaboration has taken them to places such as France, the United States, the UK, Iceland, Japan, Greenland, the Czech Republic, South Korea, Senegal, Tasmania, and many other places. Their photographs have been exhibited in galleries such as Norwegian National Museum, Bogota International Photo Biennale, the National Museum of Greenland, and this was just a few, because their list of renowned exhibits is so long. In 2017, they published their first beautiful book, and later this year, they will release their second book, Eyes As Big As Plates, Volume 2. I can't wait to talk to these ladies about how they collaborate across borders, about their stamina in such a long-term project, how they have financed their books through crowdfunding, and what they have learned along the way. Welcome, Rita and Carolina.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. It's such a pleasure. And when I'm saying here, I would like you listeners to know that this conversation is happening online. We're watching each other on video, like in a Zoom call. Rita is in New York, while Carolina and I, we are in our respective home offices in Oslo. Okay, now we can start. Congratulations, guys, on having worked together for 10 years. That makes this year your anniversary, right?
Mm-hmm. It does. Yes. It makes us a decade older.
Wow. Are you celebrating that?
Yeah. I think so. I think now I just remembered one of our first favorite collaborators, Bob from New York.
Oh,
Rita, you always say this when we talk about age.
It's true. Bob always says that.
Would you like to share it?
Yes. Bob always says that he can't wait to meet himself again every 10 years because he feels like he's a new person. And it's very, very true. Like, I think Caroline and I, we have changed a lot. And you can sort of, part of it, you can see it in the pictures, in the process pictures. But part of it also just how we think. The project has, and life has shaped us a lot in 10 years.
Yeah. Wow, how interesting to meet yourself every 10 years. I just turned 40. But is it the thank you. Is it the 40-year-old me meeting the 30-year-old? Like, how would it work? What does Bob mean?
I mean, he's 80 something. But instead of, I think it was this general idea of aging as something that's something to look forward to and something exciting milestones ahead. So like, what am I going to be like when I'm 90? Like, wow, or 110, like rock and roll dynamite excitement coming up instead of, oh crap, I'm turning 50 soon.
I like that. We do as well.
It's a really beautiful and funny project. You've photographed and staged people like all over the world. Like I'm just going to mention a few, like the fisherman Boo Boo standing in the water covered in fish in Senegal. And Bob, who you mentioned, covered in pines in a park in New York City. Is that correct? And another lady, Astrid, having this mane of rhubarb in the woods of Norway. And you'll explain this better than me, but can you tell our listeners who haven't seen your pictures the essence of the project?
Well, the first thing I thought when you asked was that we have coined our what we do a little bit like an adventure club. So people often ask, is it art? Is it journalism? Is it documentary? Is it anthropology? What is it? Is it landscape photography? It's like, maybe it's our adventure club. And that maybe goes for the people we work with or the people we meet. That's the addictive part of this project, that we get to play with strangers. And the best excuse is to have a camera and, of course, a project. But it's a three or maybe fourfold collaboration. It's Rita, Carolina, the person who are joining, and then you have the surroundings with all its form, life forms. And they are equally important for the final result. Why we are doing it, I think we are still, I don't think we have the answer to that until we finish the project. And I think maybe that's not happening until we feel bored of it and we promise to continue as long as it's fun. So I don't know if I have an answer to why. Do you, Rita?
No, but I think just in case somebody has never seen one of these images, I can, what are portraits? There's around 100 portraits. And in each image, there is basically one solitary figure, usually an older human being, who is standing in a landscape. It might be anything, seashore or mountains or fields or ditch. And they are wearing a wearable sculpture made of materials that Carolina and I have found in the surroundings. And where we are is always determined and defined and decided by the person in the image. So the location in the image might be something that's super important for this person or whatever reason, but it comes always from a conversation with the person in the image. So you might be looking at the landscape image and you might, it might be a little bit like, where's Wally? Or it might be a close-up confrontational shot of somebody who's been buried into clay on a seashore. And then, yeah, that's basically what you might see if you bump into one of our images.
And you like senior citizens.
That's an understatement, I think.
Why are you so fascinated by old people or elderly, if that's a nicer word?
Well, I guess this is a recurring question throughout the decade-long collaboration. And we always, I don't know, now it's been a while, actually. Why do you work with older people? But in the beginning, we sort of always like, why are you not asking that if we were working with teenagers? I guess people don't ask them. So it's this view of this certain demographic that they are having certain qualities that other age groups, they haven't got that. So the way Rita found me as well was because I had just finished a project called Murmurmonlag, where I was portraying Norwegian older women and looking into stereotypes of what it means to be an old woman. So I guess Ice's Biggest Plates from the get-go was dealing with the fact that we wanted to portray older people as something else than just, you know, a tsunami of problems as they are normally are in the news.
It's true. And at the same time, I was working in London a lot with museum education departments and working with like workshops and all kinds. And I was often allowed to work with children or teenagers. But when I wanted to work with older people, like maybe adults, but older people, was always really complicated. So that's what kind of led to the whole idea of like starting to write a project that would especially specifically focus on older people in Norway. And that's where it came to going for Google and putting in the three magic words that led to Caroline. Norway, granny's photographer. And then Caroline was the number one, top result. So I clicked on her work, loved what I was seeing, and sent her an email saying, hello, I am Rita Ikonen. Would you like to work with me in Norway on this little residency? And she said yes.
And I looked at Rita's work and I said yes, because I absolutely fell in love with her sense of humor. First of all, I think, with what she had already done, and something I maybe also missed in my own work to have the opportunity to play a little bit more. Because I just finished journalism in the UK as my MA, and I did photographic arts, but teaming up with Rita seemed like the best idea of having more fun.
But back then, was that the start of what Eyes as Big as Plates has become, or was it something else that you embarked on?
It was the beginning of Eyes as Big as Plates, but I guess we did not know exactly what we were doing, which is very often the best way to start. You just dive right in without a big, maybe you have a little bit of a plan, but you're open to it to morph into whatever it wants to be. And so you maybe know this already very, very well, but we started looking at like folk tales and how, and this is how we felt that the older people could properly link into this. Like maybe these older people in the community would have most connection and knowledge and insights into these folk tales. And clearly we were very, very quickly put into our right place that this is indeed not the case at all. But that's where we sort of started. So yes, it was beginning of Eyes as Big as Plates, but we had no idea. We thought that maybe it was a little residency and then I don't know what would happen. Nothing.
I think both of us, we didn't expect to get that kind of connection. Like it was a sisterhood in the making sort of from the first day. From the first moment, we basically hit it off, and what we created in 1.5 months, I think we didn't expect that to be anything else. But we finished working in June or end of May, and then we didn't really have a plan. I don't remember if we were invited by the Finnish Norwegian Culture Institute for an exhibition or if we got in touch with them to see if they would want to show the works. Do you remember, Rita?
I think we just went for coffee to the Finnish Institute in Oslo, and then while we were there, somebody had like magically pulled out from a show that should happen really, really soon, and they asked like, well, you've just made some works, would you like to exhibit? And we thought like, absolutely, great, brilliant, let's do it. And we had a teeny tiny little shoestring budget. And yeah, which led to Caroline like carrying works, taking them in a bus from London to, oh goodness, yeah. So we did the exhibition and it had a really great response. And while I was back in town for the exhibition, we were like, well, shall we do another work? And then we did another portrait while that was happening. And that sort of was like, well, maybe this doesn't need to be the end. Maybe there is more to this. Let's keep poking and see where it goes. And it was really this decision moment, like, okay, shall I spend the $30 on the cheap flight to come, because I was living in London at the time. So I come from London to Oslo and we'll meet again. It was fun. So let's continue. Why not? But no plan, no funding, no big project, the master plan of any sort. Yeah. Unlike now.
Unlike now. Yeah, tell me, what's the master plan now? No. No, but at what point did you realize, or did it at some point Was there a shift that you thought, maybe we can just keep on going?
Wasn't it in Finland?
Or did you just keep on poking?
I mean, we kept on poking, but I think something happened in Finland when we, because we were invited for the camouflage show at the Kiaspa in Helsinki. And this was around midsummers. And then we continued the thought of, maybe Caroline could just fly over there and we could see Marita's entire family, for example, who's celebrating midsummers in the summer house on the border to Russia, nearly. And then we did 7 shoots in a week or something. But the questions we asked about folktales and characters from folktales that we started off with, the answers to those were quite different to what we found in Norway, how they relate to their own surroundings and how they relate to nature. So then we started maybe asking different questions, a little bit broader than specific folktale characters and whether folktales held relevance anymore. We continued more about people's individual relationship to their own surroundings and where they are and what means something to them in their landscapes. So from then on, I think maybe we shifted a little bit and thought, let's see where we can go with this.
And also, I think that was the point when we understood that, like, okay, maybe we don't need a grand plan and it doesn't take such a huge operation, but we are often, you go and do a talk somewhere or you go and do a little exhibition. So while we are there, why don't we just put the camera in the bag and make it work somehow as a small, nimble unit that's just without the budget or without the big project production crew. You just kind of make it happen in between the lines and as part of other commissions or other projects. And that's been really, I think, a great force of us that we have been able to be so light on our feet. And still, we are just little.
Yeah, it's still just, I think, a duo without assistants or without, like, you know, managers or gallerists or media collaborators or anybody. It's just the two of us, basically. And then sometimes we have help from interpreters in South Korea who needs to be there for us to make sense of the conversations with the people we collaborate with. But yeah, mostly it's just the two of us, which is maybe what we enjoy the most. If we become too much of a big team, then the result is not as good, actually, in the photographs.
Now, I've read that you call the people you photograph collaborators and not models. Are they really like taking part of the process? Did their collaboration really also determine how the result turns out?
Absolutely. I think in each, it might vary how they do it. If somebody has a very strong connection to, like Bobo, for example, he used to fish from that particular shore his entire life. That's where that's his harbor, where he used to go from every day since he was, how young was he, 16 or even younger? Other people, they like Rita's aunt, for example, in the Finnish cold Midsummer Lake, she particularly chose water lilies because that's her plant. Other people have deep ties to a mountain range or somewhere they have longed to be, so they haven't even been there yet. So it really varies, but every person they are dictating what we are doing together with us. And some people even want to join in making the sculpture together with Rita.
And some people don't really want to join. But for example, we were in Nurmarka back in the day with NRK, and the daylight was quickly leaving us. So everybody, including the cameraman, was harvesting this material for the costume vigorously. Absolutely everybody was put to work for us. So yeah, everybody's invited to contribute to the shoot.
And when you guys are out in the field, you are the one making the sculpture or whatever you call it around the person, and Caroline
you are the one standing in behind the camera, correct?
That's a nice way, because people, many times we hear like, so who's doing what? What's the role division here? But that's the truest way of saying it. Yes, I am standing behind the camera. I'm clicking the shutter, and Rita would be kind of putting together the sculpture, putting it on the person. But apart from that, everything we do is like a double-headed or two-headed troll kind of 50-50 vision and division of labor also.
But apart from being out in the field, like when running a project and keeping it going for year after year, there's so much else to do. When you divide work then, or things that needs to be done, how do you decide then?
Are you thinking emails and accounting and things?
Yeah, applying for funding, contacting different exhibition spaces or things you're applying to be part of, working on your book, which is an enormous project, or contacting all these people. How do you juggle the roles or the tasks between you?
I wish we could say that we had a clear system.
Exactly. We sort of, I think we both write and rewrite each other's emails. So if we are contacting somebody, something more complicated, I might write it and I might send it to Caroline. She will rewrite it, send it to me. And then we're like, okay, now we both agree. And then we might send it off.
That's how Hannah and I work as well.
Yeah. But I think that's the way that it really works for us. And you are really absolutely comfortable with the other person fully butchering your grant application because you know it challenges you and it makes your text better. Because I didn't think about that. Yes, we could totally reorder the whole thing. Let's do it. But not for everybody.
Yeah, I love that process that you're kind of just like in the same thing. And what I can't do really well, Hannah can do better and the other way around. And that's but it requires a lot of letting go of ego or whatever else you might have.
Totally.
We are lucky to be living on two opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean, which means that we have around the clock kind of operational mode. So whenever one of us is sleeping, the other one is awake working, which is very handy.
This is also a super great power when you are running a Kickstarter campaign or this kind of thing, and you have to be on top of replying to people all the time. I'm sure we'll get to this later because we can really be on call 24 hours if we need to for short periods of time.
Wow, that's such a wow. I didn't think of that. I mean, it might create a bit of you guys need to find a time zone that's, or the time that's good for both of you, but your operation, yeah, it's on all the time.
Yeah, and when I've had two children in these 10 years, Rita has been running the show while I've been busy with other things. Or sometimes Rita is on another residency or busy with other things, then we can kind of take turns in that. But it's really a luxury to work in a duo like that.
But has it taken you time to find this kind of collaborative rhythm?
No.
I don't think necessarily. I think it was somehow mysteriously there from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's what we call to.
Yeah. Like Hannah and I, we write our hours down that we work. So when we work, it's not based on a feeling of having done a lot or that the other one has done very little or 1 year, maybe one works a lot while the other one works on something else, which has been very useful for us. But do you have any kind of like something anal like that you do or something very rigid that works for you so you feel that you're in balance with each other?
I just thought about, we don't have that kind of accounting, but I know that the one who's always taking notes in our duo is Rita, and I never, ever do that. And she's an excellent note taker, and also sketchbooks. It's Rita's masterpieces. She has piles and piles of sketchbooks that she uses, especially when we are on the road, out in the field. Mm. She always draws down like the materials, and then from that we can have this discussion later on, like, oh, what do you think of that plant or this landscape and look at that. What if we do this? And then we can play together from that. But that's basically always Rita's kind of role without us having talked about it. And I guess that's the most comfortable thing about our collaboration, that we don't need to talk about them or settle things because it naturally happens. And maybe I would be doing more of the post-production work when it comes to, you know, taking home the negatives, because we shoot with analog cameras, and then, you know, getting them processed and scanning them and doing all the touching up, which is, you know, if you start counting hours, we shouldn't even go there, because it doesn't work like that. It's not like a division of labor that adds up in anywhere, because I guess that's not what it's about. But we do things naturally in an organic sort of collaborative way, and it seems to work.
Definitely. And I think it's somehow there's this really built-in trust that the other person is in just as fiercely as you are. And I don't think either one of us has ever questioned that. So when there's no need to kind of look over your shoulder or wonder if the other person is giving their all, you know they are there all the way. So then it's easy. This is not a so easy to find kind of regular collaboration, but it is just a full-on trust and respect for the other person. It's, I think, takes you very, very far.
Yeah, it really does. And it sounds like you have a really great dynamic. But is there something you've learned about collaborating that perhaps others, like it's also magic when you find someone that it really clicks with, like you have. And I also feel like I have with Hannah and a few others I've collaborated with. But it can also be a challenge, like in any other kind of relationship, to be so close with someone and to have, because you care so much about the project and each other, and you have to be so, let them in on your weak sides, and and you have to work together when you're feeling great and when you're having a tough time. And so I'm kind of, if you have any things that, like if you have any disputes or conflicts that you've resolved in a way, or if you have wisdom that you would like to share.
No conflicts yet, right?
Both are kind of giggling because I think, no, not at all. But I think maybe it's like if it could be, maybe that's why we call each other sisters, because it's easy to say working wife or whatever, but it's not like that in a relationship. It's really more like a childhood friends or sisters that I guess some of them could argue and have conflicts, but I guess it boils down to maybe, I see you are so tired, let's not talk about this now, or go and have a sandwich, you're grumpy, or like you are something. It's very straightforward and direct, so it's not like convoluting or walking around the actual.
But I don't think we have ever actually argued. That doesn't really happen. Also, let's say you are really down, or you're having let's say we are under like an intense deadline crunch, but you haven't slept in 3 nights because of X, Y, and Z, and you're having a really, really not the best day. We might just spend the 1 hour and 7 minutes precious time that we have to talk about life or whatever. And just like, okay, deadline, then we blow through it because life is more important than that in that moment. And that's what you need right there, is some kind of human connection. And that's what you take. And then I think it's just there's an understanding that, yeah, yes, work is very, very important, but sometimes life absolutely bulldozes through it because that's what the project is about too.
We sometimes have like an hour therapy session for each other, or not that it's kind of say, we haven't called it that, but that's what it is. But I don't talk to anybody else like that than I do with Rita. And I can share things that I don't with other people. And I guess maybe it's just very lucky that we met. And we thank each other for that so many times because, quite special. I miss you now.
Same.
Wow. A Google search of three words. That's amazing. And it is. For me as well, when you collaborate to invest in that human touch with each other, to set that really high, to tune into how are you, and not just what's the work that needs to be done, is so important and rewarding for the relationship and the project.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yes. We're lucky. Having said that, we also have, you know, we... Rita's asking like, okay, did you sleep at all last night? It's like, no. Oh, you, it's very important. And I can just cut through and say, hey, we have, I am desperate to get this done. Let's just go straight into that Google Doc right now. And it's like, yes, let's do it. So it's not always about heartfelt gooey.
About feelings. Yeah.
But it's an invitation to say like, if you'd rather, we can, you know, skip this now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. How do you combine this project with other things you do in your life, with other freelance work or maybe other projects that you do?
I think that's too different for both of us. I think, Rita, you have been running this winter swimming project now, and you have your mail art, and you have quite a few other projects that I am not able to do at the moment because of two children. Mm-hmm. But we used to have maybe a separate project each on the side, but maybe more in the kind of early days of the project, because it kind of takes over, which is something that I love, that this is nearly like 90% of my work time is Ice's Biggest Plates, or 95% these days. But you can still think like, oh, maybe I'll do another project in the future. But right now, I think it's full on Ice's Biggest Plates for me. And Rita, you have a little bit of extra side dishes going on.
I have a little bit of extra side things going on, but actually one of them is a spin-off a little bit of Carolina's dad. And partly because I am stuck in on this side of the Atlantic and I cannot be collaborating in person. So I started winter swimming in the Atlantic to get closer. That's the closest I can get to the Nordic countries or my collaborators or whoever. So it became this Sunday swimming 2 p.m. global winter swimming workshops, which again, yeah, started as a dare from Carolina's dad from one night in Trondheim when we were drinking heavily. So that's the beginning of that. And yeah, how does it happen? Yes, I agree that the Ice's Biggest Plates does eat up most of the calendar hours that are there for work. And that's fine. In the beginning, it was less so. But again, like I was saying earlier, that it's sort of combined. Like, let's say you go do a lecture invited by something as you, as a independent person in the name of whatever, and then Carolina comes over and then we do an Ice's Biggest Plates shoot, and maybe nobody knows about it. It's not an official part of your business trip, but it does become part of Ice's Biggest Plates, so it does seep into most hours.
Ukens annonsør co-working space 657 i Oslo. Som frilanser så kan man jo føle seg ganske alene, og savne etter kollegaer eller et sted å gå til kan være stort. Vi vil anbefale deg å sjekke ut 657, for de retter seg mot oss som i den kreative bransjen og har masse fokus på community. Akkurat det å ha andre mennesker å spare med når man jobber alene kan være utrolig verdifullt. 657, de har en egen mentorordning slik at du kan utvikle deg. De har foto- og podcaststudio til en sympatisk pris og tilbyr fleksible løsninger for deg som kun trenger et sted å sitte et par dager i uken. Les mer på 657.no.
Your project has been exhibited in many places all over the world. How has it happened?
I think internet is to thank for a lot. First of all, how we met and also how it got spread. In the beginning, I think we did most of the legwork ourselves, applying for places we'd like to go to do shoots. Iceland, for example, we both wanted to go, Japan, and then we worked to get there. And as we continued, and as social media kind of grew with the project as well, I think it was easier for people to notice the work, And you could say a lot about how your artistic work is being spread without attribution or credit or anything, but at least it gives a lot of people a chance to see it that wouldn't otherwise get that opportunity. And I think that's how we also get emails from Tasmania inviting us for a festival in 2019 that probably would not have happened was it not for like a Facebook post of some person spreading the Agnes photo of this woman from Norway who just turned 100. So I think internet is a good explanation to that, as well as us kind of having a goal of exhibiting specific places, for example. Many we still have not yet been to.
Like we wanted to show in Greenland. And I think we spent a year more or less at pestering different organizations and different people and saying, hey, we'd really love to come and what can we do and who can we contact? And finally, again, through the Finnish Cultural Institute in Norway, actually, we finally made the connection to get to exhibit there. But sometimes it's just sheer persistence that we land somewhere where we really, 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 really want to go.
Chance, internet, persistence.
Good summary.
Yeah. I guess three words recipe. Yeah. But how is the finance behind all of this? Does Eyes as Big as Plates pay your bills?
That's an intricate question. I think, like, for example, this month or this winter, both of us got the government stipend from Finland and Norway, and that's like a lottery, winning the lottery, and that doesn't happen every year. And apart from that, we are spending I think probably 80% of our time applying for funding, so Isis Biggest Plates, it's paying our bills indirectly through selling some art and doing commissions and getting small fees for being published here and there or having fees for exhibiting. But mostly, I guess, we are applying for project funding to do what we do. And we get that from all sorts of places, either it's embassies around or municipalities within Norway or the country we go to. Specific project grants, Nordic channels. It's good to be a Nordic duo in that matter. Kickstarter funding.
Yes, we absolutely acknowledge that we are fully privileged there. But yeah, neither one of us drives a Ferrari yet.
And neither one of us have like a day job to get ends to meet, which is a great luxury also.
This is true.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, not a Ferrari, but not a day job. Pretty good.
Yeah.
You financed your first book by crowdfunding and have just done so again with your forthcoming book. What have you learned about doing this kind of hustling?
Nice question. I think I don't know what the English word is, but skamvett, Norwegian word skamvett, the first thing to put away.
No shame? Or
no shame, I guess, yeah. Mm. I think we are good at that. Because it's a little bit different way and the status of getting your money from crowdfunding versus getting it from the culture department of Norway or Finland. It still has like a big difference, at least in the art world. And I think we are lucky to not really care about that. I think many people do, but we don't, I think. At least now we don't, but maybe we were more hesitant in the beginning. But I think mostly it's a great way of meeting not a new audience, but it's this particular project is really fitting to crowdfunding, I think, because it's been all over the world and it has maybe like an extra big audience in the States, and that's also where crowdfunding probably is biggest. So it's a little easier for us in that respect.
Yeah, that we are so embroiled in collaboration from the get-go that it makes sense that the funding of the book is also born from a bigger collaboration that way. So it fit the ethos. But I know for the first book, for a few years, we were applying for different grants and we would get a couple of thousand from here, a couple of thousand from there. But I'm sure you know it takes a couple of thousand dollars to even make a dummy, just to make a dummy. So the budget for our first book, I think it was $30,000 to actually get a good, proper, great book, because we didn't just want to make any old book. We wanted to make a great, great grand book. So yes, we needed people power for that. And we were really lucky to have it.
What does it require of you when you go into a crowdfunding that lasts for how long? Like it's like a marathon, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It's a month long. That's just the campaign. And then you have to prepare for it and have everything ready. And then it's the aftermath, which is kind of making sure everybody who has supported the project gets their reward. And you have to physically go to the post office and send hundreds of prints and other postcards or small gifts or whatever it is that you have as a reward. So it's several months work. So yeah, I don't know if we would have done it if we knew that upfront.
But we did it twice, so I think we would have done it. I think doing a Kickstarter takes a really deep love for Google Sheets or Excel or any of this, which I really love Google Sheets. So I am really happy to be jotting numbers or names or address changes or making labels or kind of keeping the system sort of organized.
And I love you for it.
Yeah. It's sweet, sweet division of labor there.
That's an amazing skill to have. And my colleague Hannah in this my podcast colleague Hannah has the same skill, and I'm so grateful as well.
Yes, me too.
I've never seen anything like it until I experienced it in this collaboration. So you actually sit there, Rita, and see the orders coming in and keeping track on the money coming in and what's going where.
What's going where and who changed their address and who would like it a little bit pinker than a little bit less pink, and who actually yesterday wanted Morten but today they want Turlev, and who actually want their postcard delayed by 1 week, and who actually now just divorced and they're not sure where they're going to go. So can we contact them in 2.5 weeks again and check if that's okay? Or who the print got crimpled, can we send them a new one? Or they actually, I mean, it's any number of things. It's hundreds of hours of emailing. I mean, I have really mastered, I have really kind of gone deep into the art of apologizing, especially at the posting of our last book. We had an absolutely disastrous distribution system for the first book. We literally had collaborators pass away 1 hour drive away from the storage where these books were coming from before getting the book. And it took, what was it, like 2 months or something? Amazing. You couldn't make this stuff up. But yes, it's a many, many, like if you do Kickstarter, prepare to kind of dedicate a good chunk of your life to your computer.
Wow. So a few months then. A month of preparation, a month of the Kickstarter running, and at least a month of rounding up?
I would say that's minimum, yeah.
Minimum. Hmm.
Yes, and it depends what kind of project you are trying to fund. If it's a photography book and you happen to have promised prints as a reward, postcards, artworks, and books, then you also need to be very in love with the post office, unless you have, you know, assistants that could do it for you, which we didn't. But yeah.
Do you ever struggle with your motivation
in terms of grant writing and, you know, putting out letters in Google Doc. For example, now we are writing this book, then we might be struggling for the motivation when it comes to finishing something or working through something that's difficult, instead of, oh, let's write this email to this other person or deal with this exhibition coming up or, you know, do other things. Procrastinating, we are good at that, and that's a little bit of a shame that both of us are equally good at that. So we sometimes lack the motivation of doing the not so exciting things of the project, but we manage to get there and we do it, but that's probably sometimes where we could be better, I think, but not when it comes to finding motivation to continue the project.
I agree wholeheartedly. There's full motivation for continuing the project, but especially if the task is something colossal, like let's go through the field notes for the past 4 years today. It's maybe a little bit tough moment to sit in front of that screen on that morning. But you can do it. You start and then you start chomping away and that could be take a bit of motivation boost from something. But yeah, the actual project, working on the project is amazing. But obviously now, because of COVID, we've been on a pause together with the rest of the world.
When you lack motivation on that morning when you're going to read through all your field notes, what do you do?
I call Carolina.
I think that I enjoy, at least myself, to then tick some other boxes that is, you know, on the burning list of things to do. If you at least get three other small things done, it feels like, ah, yes, victory. And then you can kind of get on with the bigger tasks. But just to sit there and wait for the creativity to flush over yourself when you are not feeling it, it's really, we have tried, but that doesn't work. So it's better to just dive straight into something else and then come back to it. And then, it will happen, but at its own pace sometimes.
Yeah, and we've talked about in this podcast that one really just needs to dive into it, and motivation usually follows if it's not there from the beginning.
Yeah, to turn up, just to even like appear in front of your screen, even if you're not feeling it. That's already a very, very good start. And then stick with it, even if you're maybe not getting your task done. Like Carolina was saying, the starting from the peripheral vision with other little tasks and then working your way towards the monster. That could be something.
Just like this morning, Rita got up at 5 a.m. We had a meeting with a book designer who lives in Stockholm. And Rita lives in New York, so she had to get up to managed to be there for the grand decision of what's going to be on the cover of the book. And we had not decided, the two of us, yesterday, last night before I crashed, and she was still up, like, okay, what do you think? What should we go for? And we had like three finalists for the cover of images. And this morning, nothing was decided. And then at 5 to 5, Rita was kind of rolling out of bed, getting ready for this meeting. And that was the kind of starting point of landing something quite important. But we both knew that this is just how it's going to be done. It's the only way. And in the conversation with the designer, we sort of landed. But other people probably could not work like that. And it's not for everyone to work like this. But I guess that's the most efficient way to get.
Han visste det ikke ennå, men noen av de beste barndomsminnene han skulle ta med seg videre I livet var dagene hjemme syk fra skolen med bestefar som barnevakt. Ikke det at det var så innmari gøy å være syk, men han fikk bestille McNuggets til lunsj og se på TV I sofaen mens bestefar leste papiravisa ved siden av. Og det nettopp sånne dager som betyr mer enn det virker som der og da. For sånn livet, og McDonald's bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Strøm mer enn du forventer deg på Disney+. Strøm mer drama, som den nye sesongen av Grey's Anatomy.
Everybody wants to talk about it.
Strøm mer glamour I den helt nye serien Vanderpump Villa.
What is wrong with him?
Strøm mer humor I nye episoder av Family Guy.
What?
Strøm alt dette og mye mer fra kun 59 kroner per måned. Disney Plus, mer enn du forventer deg. Abonnement kreves 18+.
Things done.
this project and your relationship, does it consume a lot of your space in your life? Like, how much do you carry it with you, both like the time you spend, but also how much it is with you in your life?
I think absolutely. If my husband was in the room, he would talk for me and say, I wonder how much time I've spent with you the last months. And that's actually us being in the same house 24/7. He's unemployed at the moment, but on daddy leave, is that what it's called? Paternity leave, very official. So we're in the same house, but I'm seeing like tons more to Rita than so it's, that's also goes same. It takes, you know, it's not always like that, but definitely I would say so, that we, it's an all-consuming activity, enterprise.
Yes, fully. Same here. It's very normal to whatever day, anything, I will be on Zoom at 6 a.m. Plans, you're out in the cabin with my wife or anything. It's like, okay, I need to go and drive into the nearby town to get network to be on Zoom with Caroline now. So you guys go pick mushrooms. I'll see you later. So it often overrides any private life. That's fine.
But you two meeting each other, I mean, how it's, I just want to reflect a little bit on how it has changed your life and your working life.
Absolutely, it has. I don't even know if we can say to what extent, because it's like a before and after thing. But I guess we were both searching for something like that without being aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, open for it.
Yeah, open for it. So I can't imagine how it would be without now, 10 years into this madness.
I'm predicting that this is going to be a lifelong journey.
Mm, I hope so.
Oh, I hope you're right.
What's the absolutely best thing about being in your adventure club? And being on this, working on this project.
Being out on the shoots and having the good excuse to go and walk up to somebody and say hello. And then never knowing what might come out of that. That's the best thing.
That, and also, I guess, the combination of things that we get to do what we both really love doing while traveling to places we'd love to go to and talking to strangers that we both have an inclination towards, and getting this to be able to call that kind of our job. It is a lot of work, and it's you know, some people say, oh, you're lucky to get to do what it's your hobby and you live from your hobby, but it's not about that, but it's kind of this life project that you get to call your work.
Your project is so inspiring, and the way you build on it and just that you don't stop, and that this was this project and we're happy, but that you continue working slowly, steadily, and making it bigger and bigger.
I guess we are often talking about how we can move onwards and how we can take it further, and us traveling around the world to kind of ask about people's relationship to nature. That's a big paradox, or becoming even bigger with maybe the big pause we're having now when we get to reflect upon that, finding ways to develop it further, but with maybe not flying so much that we have been in the past 10 years. And how could that work? Like, how will it change? And maybe try to be a little bit more, maybe a little bit less subtle activists and more directly trying to see what art can do to change things. That's something we haven't figured out how to do yet, but that's something we really want to work towards.
I'm really happy you brought that up, because this is like, since the very beginning, we have been working on the series, but we have ourselves often struggled to write about it or to put it into words. Like, what is it that we do? We know what we are doing. We feel what we are doing. But to contextualize it in a larger setting, that's always been a little bit of a challenge. But from, I think, quite early on, this, what Caroline was talking about, of having a little bit of greener angle to our operations is something that we have been wanting to push towards. And I think this big pause that we are in now is a really excellent opportunity to have recalculated a little bit and like also to slow down, because we are so excited about the project. I think we have really pressed on like a full throttle ahead a lot of the time, but now it's been really good to just kind of, okay, take stock, think about it. What have we done? How have we done it and why? And where would we like to go next? And how do we want to go about that? And what are the changes that are necessary to take to not only to address our environmental impact, but some maybe some social issues too, that we have this platform and we have this voice that we can use. How can we use it better? So do we have answers to these yet? No, not really fully, not fully. But this is something that we want to take forward or to keep in mind as we're going forward.
And has that been like lingering in the back there for years? But maybe now during this pause, something that you want to put more, give it more of a, like a front seat in your project? Or
I think so. We were talking about it a lot before, like during 2019, when we did travel to Tasmania and Senegal and Korea and it's so many different parts of the world. We were like always asking people the same questions when we met them, like, have you noticed any changes in the climate? Are you taking any steps towards adapting, or how do you feel about it? So those questions started to be there always, but we didn't know how to how for Rita and me to also change, like how can we do that ourselves in the project, and also angle what we do in slightly different way than before. So I guess it was there, but it's been increasingly on our minds now that we are not actually out there in the field.
And you're thinking to communicate it more through your project, or is it also that you would like to travel less ideally in your project?
I think both. Who we work with, we were talking about collaborating with scientists and farmers or people who are directly either trying to work on this theoretically or also like directly on the field who notices the changes.
Yeah, to help, like say that's there's a scientist with a kind of like a complex message and findings from their work. And if our collaboration could help them spread their message and to get their kind of work seen by a wider audience, that could be a really beneficial collaboration, I think, for us both. And then to go from there, or if we weren't to reduce our travel, maybe we could choose the methods or the transport ways that we would travel in a more kind of responsible way. That's another option. Obviously, that's not always possible, but we could be more mindful or clump the travels together. So you'd go from here to here to here to here, and then you'd only have two. But I think neither one of us really flies anywhere for holidays. I mean, it's not really something, not that that's a claim for fame in any way, but just I think there's a lot to improve there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I wish we could continue. It's so nice.
Great to talk.
Yeah, it was super lovely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Enjoy your day, Rita, and enjoy your afternoon, Carolina. Thank you. Bye.
This episode is produced in collaboration with and with funding from the Finnish Norwegian Cultural Institute. The Finnish Norwegian Cultural Institute seeks to promote cultural exchange between Finland and Norway and increase awareness of Finland in Norway. The aim is to encourage cooperation, dialogue, and mobility between Finnish and Norwegian artists, cultural entities, and organizations, and to produce a diverse program for the public at large. Thank you.
Han satt der i McCaféen med pensumboka og en latte, og for tredje gang bladde han en side tilbake og leste den på nytt. Og igjen var det som om ordene som sto der bare stokket seg og ikke lenger hadde noen betydning. Men han så at alle andre som satt der klarte å jobbe. Så hva var egentlig problemet hans, annet enn det åpenbare? At eksamen var tre dager unna, og han bare en tredjedel inn i pensum. Og det er sånne ting som gjør at noen tar opp en vindusplass her hele dagen. Men sånn er livet. Og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.